Cool. Good morning. So I was chatting to a guy who was here for the first time at Just Gen, and we were speaking, and I realized I've been in Stellenbosch for 6 years already, and I'm still studying. But I really enjoy Stellenbosch, and something that I love about Stellenbosch is also the beginning of each year, you see this influx of people coming. So I enjoy meeting new people, and I love it when new people get added to the church. But the thing is, when a whole lot of new people come, there's a whole lot of remembering that needs to take place. People's names, where they come from, a bit of a background, what are they studying, where do they work. You see, I've got this tendency to have a conversation with someone that I just met, to walk away and remember everything about them. Like, I swear, I'll remember their blood group and their second cousin's middle name, but then I'll probably forget their name. And one of the worst things for me is when someone comes up to you and they're like, "Hey, Rowan, how's it going?" You're like, "Hey, man, how are you doing?" What's even worse is when you completely forget that you've actually met the person and had a conversation. So I find myself, it's not only in this area where I'm forgetful. But before I get back to me, I want us to quickly look at two narratives out of the story of Jesus in the book of Mark. So the first is in Mark 6. So by the time we get to Mark 6, quite a lot has happened. And Jesus understands the importance of resting. So he calls his disciples and they go to a quiet, uninhabited place. But you see, by Mark 6, Jesus has built up quite the reputation with the people. And he couldn't just sneak his way to this quiet place. People saw that he was going. And what happened was people start flocking from all over to meet with him. Now, if it was me, I would probably have either tried to run away or tried to explain to the people that I need to rest. But Jesus starts, he has compassion on them, and he teaches, and he shares, and he teaches, and he shares. When I read the story, I wonder the people that are there, like what's going on in their mind eventually? Are they so in awe of what Jesus is saying that they completely forget about all the things that are happening in and around them? I mean, when I was still going to, like I'm done with class now, but when I was still going to class, by 11 a.m., my stomach is already grumbling. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I just want to get it over with. Now, now, these people didn't sit in some fancy church auditorium with comfortable seats, air conditioning, kids' church workers looking after the kids. They sat outside, on the floor, on rocks, sun blazing, kids running around. Surely someone was hoping that someone says, like, "Jesus, can't you just pause for a little while?" So eventually one of the disciples comes to Jesus and they're like, "Jesus, we really need you to send these people back. They actually need to eat." And Jesus tells the disciples, "But you guys feed them." Now, I have a struggle feeding myself at times. On Friday night, we had 8 guys at our place. That's a mission. Now, imagine you've got a few thousand people with you. And for those of you who've been to a Josh Gen gathering, imagine that times 5, and Jesus is just like casually, "Cool, you guys can feed them." So obviously the disciples don't. And Jesus takes 5 loaves and 2 fishes, blesses it, breaks, shares, breaks, shares, breaks, shares. And there's more than enough food for everyone. And there's actually leftovers. So then from Mark 6, he jumps through a few more stories. One evening, Jesus casually goes for a stroll on the water. He goes to different places and heals people. People even touching his clothes get healed. He casts out a demon. He heals a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment. And all the time, the disciples were with him and seeing these things. Then we get to Mark 8, verse 1 to 3. In those days, when again a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to him and said to them, "I have compassion on the crowd because they have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way, and some of them have come from far away." So here we've got a situation, 4,000 people follow Jesus to a desolate place. They have no food. And again, there's this sort of slight hint to the disciples. You guys will need to feed them. The setting, the language usage, everything is screaming out. This is sort of a repeat of the situation that we just saw. So as a reader, I'm thinking the disciples will go like, ah, I can whip out my peanut butter sandwich and tin of pork chips. That's a classic Mornay lunch, by the way. And Jesus is just going to multiply it. But in reality, their response is verse 4. How can one feed these people? As I read this, I think, do you not remember what God has just done? On a side note, if you finish reading the story, God actually does do exactly the same thing. But this thing of forgetfulness about what God has done isn't an isolated, oh, silly disciple sort of scenario. It's actually something that's very common throughout biblical history. So I want to look at one more story. So in the book of Exodus and up to Deuteronomy, we read this incredible story of God taking his people out of Egypt, which is probably the most powerful nation at the time. And he promises them he'll take them into a land that he has. And he doesn't come to them and like, okay, guys, listen up. I'm going to put the Egyptians to sleep. While they're sleeping, quietly sneak out of this country. It's like, no. God goes all out spectacular. Pitch black darkness, fire from heaven, plagues. We sing metaphorically, you split the sea so I can walk through. God literally opened up a sea in front of these people and allowed them to walk through. So they mission through the desert, and finally they get to the place that God has promised them. So they send him some guys to go check it out. Again, me as a reader, I'm thinking, these guys just experienced some incredible stuff. They're going to come back and be like, yeah, let's go. But what happens? The spies come back with this report. Yo, did you see those O's? They are huge. And what do the people do? We're not going in there. God, I know you promised that, but we're not going there. And again, I think to myself, do you not remember what God has just done? In 2016, I really wanted to go on an outreach. So the one day they advertised that 412 is going to Zambia, but I needed 10,250 Rand to go on this trip. So I've heard God coming through financially for other people. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm gonna trust God for this. I shared with our student community and we prayed together. But other than that, I didn't really ask anyone. And God came through in the most incredible ways. My mom did a Bible school in Bloom during that time. The guy who leads the Bible school feels that he needs to give money to my mom to give to me. In first year, I led a guy to the Lord in my Yuba. His studies never worked out. He moves back to Joburg. One morning, he messages me. He had a dream and just felt on his heart he needs to help me. And he also wants to contribute finances. He doesn't know what for, but he feels God just laying on his heart. A week before I have to go on the outreach, I realized, I don't have all my money yet. Like, Lord, it's a week, please. Exactly a week before I get a payment, there's money to the account. I go work out. Exactly 10,250 Rand. 2017 comes. So Stellenbosch's Josh Jen did its first outreach to PE and sort of the Southern Cape area. And this wasn't nearly as expensive as my trip to Zambia. And this time I actually had a bit of saving money that I could use for the trip. So I was like, cool, I can just go on the trip. So one morning, I'm spending time with the Lord at Jan Marais Park, and I feel the Lord saying that I need to join another 412 outreach, which would go to KwaZulu-Natal after the one that I did. This means that I do not have enough money anymore. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, how is this going to work out financially? So I'm trying to strategize. I'm like, how can I make this thing work? And then I felt the Lord taking me to this section in Mark 6 and then in Mark 8 where they experienced the same thing. And I think to myself, do you not remember what God has done? And the thing is, this isn't the only situation where this happens in my life. God has been faithful countless times in many different areas, and yet I tend to forget. So as I'm sitting there on this bench feeling petty and slightly ashamed, I'm reminded of what God has done. I'm reminded of who God is, and suddenly there's a sense of faith within me. And I've seen that numerous times, how even the slightest reminder can all of a sudden just stir something up within us. 2 Peter 1, verse 13 to 15. I think it right, as long as I'm in the body, to stir you up by way of reminder. Since I know that the putting off of my body will be soon, as our Lord Jesus Christ made clear to me. And I will make every effort so that after my departure, you'll be able at any time to recall these things. And that's really my aim this morning, is that there will be a stirring up within us, but also a greater sense that at any time we can recall the works of God. Psalm 105, verse 5. It says, remember the wondrous works that he has done, his miracles, and the judgment he uttered. So to jump back to the story of the people of Israel, so they get back to the desert, and eventually they come to a place where they can enter into the promised land. And again, God tells Joshua this time that he's going to be doing some splitting open of the waters. So in Joshua 4, verse 5 to 7, we see how Joshua instructs the leaders of the tribe of Israel. So he tells them to pass on before the ark of the Lord into the midst of Jordan, and each of you take a stone upon his shoulder. So that makes me think if you have to take it on your shoulder, it's not a clippy, it's a stone. According to the number of tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in the time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordans were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. So they take in these 12 stones that he says, well, this is going to be a memorial to you. But sort of the three people that they identify is one, this is a sign for you. And then on the other side, it's also a sign for your children and actually for Israel, the generations to come, people that weren't even directly involved in that situation. This will be a sign for them. So imagine you were part of the story. You saw these guys carrying these rocks. 5 years down the line, you visit the Jordan again and you see these rocks. You're like, oh my word, this is what God has done. You can tell someone else, it's not just this God that we don't experience. Like, look at that rock. You know how that got there. Remember what God has done. So the two aspects, the personal side, this is a sign that I saw with my own eyes. And on the other side, something for the sake of other people. So firstly, remembering what God has done for us. I want to ask you, how aware are you of God's working in your life? Do you see Him breaking into your life? We all have these friends who have, let's call it a gift of being completely ignorant to social settings. And something that may happen, like something might happen in a group, blissfully unaware. People might get irritated, or there might be in a conversation, this guy's actually in a rush. And these people won't at all know that it's happening. It's obvious to the rest of us, but they legitimately don't see it. And I think for some of us, it's like that with the work of God as well. God is busy working. God is always working, and yet we are completely unaware. I found that I become aware of His working very quickly when I get to the point, as we were saying earlier, where I come to a place of I can't go any further, when I realize I'm dependent on God. Self-sufficiency and independence will weaken our sight to the working of God. Secondly, when was the last time that you as an individual, you as husband and wife, you as a family, revisited the things that God has done in your life. And I want to challenge you on that. Use today, use this week to go back and think again of what God has done. Let it be a sign unto you. And then on the other side, there might be some of us here who thinks like, okay, well, I've seen God coming through in something like finances, but I've never seen him heal someone through me. I've never experienced healing, and that's actually what I need right now. So there's no sort of frame of reference of like, cool, God, I want to trust you for healing. Or there might even be some people here, if you're honest, you can't actually think of anything that God has done specifically in your life. So we live in a culture that celebrates the individual and the individual's experience. And as with most things, there is some form of good in it, but there's a danger that we start basing our view of God, the way that we look at our relationship with God, through the lens of our own experience. If I haven't seen or experienced it, then it doesn't count or is not true. I want to bring a bit of a different perspective. Psalm 136, the psalmist starts praising God. I'm going to read here. And he says, give thanks to the Lord for his good and his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the God of gods for his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord of lords for his steadfast love endures forever. So he's sort of praying general things about God. Then all of a sudden he jumps to verse 10 and he says, to him who struck down the firstborn of Egypt, for his steadfast love endures forever. Verse 11, and brought Israel out from among them, for his steadfast love endures forever. The psalmist is praising God for something that he was not directly involved in. This is actually something that took place hundreds of years before his life. But for him, the story of the ancient Israelites was as much his story as it was theirs, because it was actually about God. I'm going to say that again. It was as much the psalmist's story as it was the Israelites' story, because it was actually about God. And for us, one of the foundations of understanding the Bible, the Word of God, is that it reveals to us the truth about who God is. The story of Moses leading the people of Israel isn't primarily about Moses. It's about God. The story of Abraham receiving his child as God has promised isn't primarily about Abraham. It's about God. The story of Aiden receiving a car as she has trusted God isn't primarily about Aiden. It's about God. The incredible story of Becca's healing that we experienced last year isn't primarily about Becca or the Clark family. It's about God. And the incredible thing is that as we get born again into Jesus, we get grafted into the story of his. And as I read the word, as I hear the testimonies of other people, I can be stirred up in faith because I remember God and I remember God's working. And even this morning, there's been that sense of God sort of putting his finger on certain areas where we might be needing him. But I want to stir us up by the way of reminder through our own stories and reminding us of the stories of other people. Let's not hang in the forgetfulness, but let's be reminded of God's faithfulness. So again, let's consider, where are you at this morning? Let's do a bit of a heart check. What are the things that are making you anxious? What are the things that you're fearful about? Your studies, current work situation, and needing to make decisions about what's coming next in life. Difficult circumstances, things beyond your control. Personal sickness or the sickness of family members, pain from the past, shame, brokenness, whatever it might be. Josh, Jen, remember how God has led and will always lead his people as you read the story of Israel, as you hear the story of Hank, as you hear the story that Kyle shared last year. Josh Jen, remember the faithfulness in God in salvation as you read about Paul in the book of Acts, as you hear the stories of Lycona and Jock. Josh Jen, remember God's faithfulness in healing as you think of the blind man in the story of Mark, as you hear the testimonies of Rebecca's cancer and of Nathan's stomach pains. Josh Jen, remember the faithfulness of God's provision as you consider how he provided for his people in the wilderness and how he provided me for money for an outreach and provided a car to Aiden. Josh Jen, remember the ability of God to deal with our own past and heal our brokenness as you read the story of the woman at the well and hear the testimony of Martinez. And the thing is, in times like this, it's like, oh wow, it's there, I see it. The real tests come in when we walk out of there. We can be stirred up over here, but we need to take this thing and we need to learn how to remind ourselves. And that really is my prayer, that as soon as we experience a bit of anxiety, as soon as we experience a fear, as soon as we're confronted with something, it's like, God, I do not know where I'm going, that our default will be to remember. Josh Jen, remember your God. May faith be stirred in us for personal breakthrough as we remember. May faith be stirred in us to see God breaking through powerfully in our lives as we remember. May faith be stirred in us again to trust God for salvations, for signs and wonders, for miracles as we remember. May faith be stirred in us to see this town of ours transformed by Jesus as we remember. Remember the faithfulness of Jesus. Remember Jesus. Can we stand? Into, if you guys can please just come. Also, there's a song I asked Lentu and them just to prep that we can respond in. But I think for me the biggest part of this isn't just now. Like I said, it is the way that we're gonna walk it out when we go out of here. How are we gonna remember for ourselves? But again, as has been the theme sort of throughout the morning, let's just close our eyes. And I want to pray that God will do something in our hearts, that we will be a people who are quick to remember. Now, God, thank you that there's so much that you have given us to look back upon, Lord. God, there's so many things where we can see your hand, where we can see your faithfulness. And Jesus, I really trust you that you will stir this thing within us. Oh Lord, with whatever we are faced, that our first response will be to remember our God. That our eyes will be set upon you, Jesus. And I ask that as other people also share their testimonies and tell their stories, oh Lord, that it will stir up a personal faith within us. We want to see rightly, Lord. We don't want to be those that are quick to forget and actually miss out on what you have for us, Lord. Just while everyone's eyes are closed, I mentioned earlier that there might be some people who've never experienced God actually coming through. And for some, you might already know Jesus. It's time to start trusting him for the impossible. But I think there might be another group of people that you've never seen God working. Maybe because you don't actually know him. You've actually never had a relationship with him. And this morning, there's an opportunity for you to come to that point. To come to know God. For your story to be lined up with all of the things that we have been speaking about. So if that is you, while everyone's eyes are closed, if you know that you don't have a relationship with Jesus and you want that, we want to give you the opportunity for that this morning. So if that is you, if you can just put up your hand, And just the leaders will look out and will come pray for you if there's anyone. So for us, let's respond in a song of worship.